What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Hi, I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. We are kicking off a Squawk Pod Report special series, Our Weekend with Warren Buffett. We're coming to you straight from Omaha, Nebraska at the Berkshire Hathaway Annual Shareholders Meeting. The wit and wisdom of investor Warren Buffett from the Oracle himself.
We didn't agree with plenty of his ideas, but we did agree with his values and motivation. And that's a better lesson than having somebody that reading to you from a catechism that has got a lot of rules in it.
The buzziest news from the shareholder Q&A, like a bet and loss on Paramount.
It was 100% my decision, and we sold it all, and we lost quite a bit of money, and that happens in this business.
And Berkshire's big trim to its biggest holding, Apple.
We have sold shares. Apple is the largest common stock holding we have now.
In the wake of legendary Vice Chair Charlie Munger's passing, a renewed focus on succession, Berkshire after Buffett.
I feel very comfortable about the fact that it will be made by a board that they've got loads of brain power.
Plus, who's at Omaha's biggest party? Berkshire's portfolio company's starring role.
Don't forget your special commemorative boxes of See's Candy.
Checking in with the leaders of See's Candies, Squishmallows, Lubrizol, and the pilot company.
You have a capital-intensive business. You have high turnover. You have low margin. It's cyclical. It's seasonal. If you have one or two of those in any business, it's really going to be pretty challenging. Trucking has all of it.
And, of course, the Buffett-adoring shareholders themselves, like 14-year-old Daphne, a believer for more than half her life.
As a kid who was like six, the idea that someone who was only a little bit older than me could do all of that seemed like one of those superhero stories, you know?
This special Squawk Pod report starts right after this.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
They call it Woodstock for capitalists, the Berkshire Hathaway Annual Shareholders Meeting.
Welcome to See's. Got two commemorative boxes of chocolate right here.
Straight through for checkout?
It's a rollicking, reflective weekend celebration of ownership in one of America's largest companies and the 93-year-old man who built it.
Whatever you're doing, keep doing it.
Tens of thousands of shareholders in Berkshire Hathaway descend on Omaha every spring.
It's quite an experience coming here at 4 a.m. in the morning in the pouring rain.
For a two-day gathering that's part festival.
We wanted to make sure we get you this amazing Harlem Globetrotters jersey.
I'm probably the only guy on the team that uses a cane.
Part trade show,
Sandy!
Part family reunion.
I know he's this tycoon and stuff, and I sort of know that in my head, but that has nothing to do with my reality. He's my big brother.
Part mad dash for the best seats in the house.
So when the doors open, what do you do?
I will run.
I run, yeah. I run.
And in 2024, part memorial.
Don't wear out all your clapping on Charlie. I mean, we got...
Each year, for several hours, Berkshire Chairman and CEO Warren Buffett holds court, unscripted, with about 40,000 of the conglomerate's shareholders, directly answering their questions about the business or any of its investments, as well as about love, success, and the mysteries of life. But this year, since this all started in an Omaha cafeteria in 1973, is Buffett's first annual meeting without his longtime partner and vice chair, Charlie Munger, who passed away late last year at the age of 99.
Please turn up the lights, and I hope you'll join me in applauding Charlie Munger, the architect of Berkshire.
Munger's death has underscored succession again at Berkshire and what the company that Buffett built could look like without Buffett.
I would leave the capital allocation to Greg.
He is perhaps the world's most famous investor. He has amassed a more than $100 billion personal fortune, running the $800 billion conglomerate that manages dozens of household names.
We are here in Omaha, Nebraska, on the floor of the exhibit hall where Berkshire companies are selling their wares.
Everything from Fruit of the Loom to Dairy Queen.
Chocolate Dilly Bar.
Awesome. Two Buster bars. You want to go Buster bar as well?
Geico, Duracell, Brooks Running, and much, much more. Like the popular kids' toy, Squishmallows.
I think we've sold maybe 400 million.
Yeah, 400.
Totally. It's crazy.
And there's only 130 million households.
You sell more Charlies than me. Don't mention it.
Okay.
All of the material you'll hear in today's podcast was recorded on location in Omaha, Nebraska, over May 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, 2024, as part of CNBC's coverage. Our Becky Quick was there.
You've got Warren Buffett, who's right now walking on the floor. He's been meeting with the CEOs from each of these Berkshire companies.
And Mike Santoli for all the fun and the news.
Good morning and welcome to CNBC's special coverage of the 2024 Berkshire Hathaway Annual Shareholder Meeting.
Okay, we put out some results for the first quarter this morning at 7 o'clock our time, and few sharp-eyed analysts and press people already picked up one or two items. But if we could start out with slide number one, which is...
Shareholders of all homelands and all ages come and wait in long lines to get into the CHI Health Center in downtown Omaha.
We're with people from around us, from Australia, Montreal. I mean, the whole world's here.
Time, I come from Hong Kong.
Tell me about how long the trip was.
I think around 25 hours.
I'm from India, Bangalore, India. This is my first time I'm traveling.
All to hear directly from the Oracle himself, his vision for the future of Berkshire Hathaway and his successor's vision for the future of the company. Much of the news that comes out of this weekend is from the shareholder questions. Anybody who owns stock in the company can ask the leadership whatever's on their mind. Of the hundreds of questions sent in advance of the meeting, our Becky Quick curates a number of them to read, covering various themes.
We will alternate questions between Becky and those of you in the audience.
In early morning hours before the annual meeting, in the rain, in the dark, I met one shareholder, Daphne Kalir Starr. She's 14.
We got here and then we just sat and camped for hours.
And she's ready to ask Warren anything.
I'm still not exactly sure what I'm going to say, but I have a pretty clear idea.
And this would not be her first time. Daphne's a veteran.
Daphne, you're 14. How long have you been coming to the Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting?
This is my seventh year. If we subtract two COVID years, I've only been here 5 years in person, but 7 years in total.
How old were you when you started coming?
I was seven.
Why does a seven-year-old want to come to a big corporate shareholders meeting?
Well, it started when I was six.
Okay.
I was on a family trip with my dad in Israel, and I was like completely jet lagged and couldn't sleep. It was like 2 a.m, and my dad was reading like this really thick 800-page book.
Okay.
And I was like, I can't sleep, you need to read to me. And my dad hadn't packed any children's books, and he was like, this book is gonna be really boring. And I was like, I don't care, you just gotta read to me. It was The Snowball, Warren Buffett's autobiography. And so we read through the chapter on Rose Blumkin.
Mrs. B.
Yeah, the one and only. And the next day I woke up and I was like, Dad, I want to go to the Nebraska Furniture Mart. And he was like, okay, slow down. Why don't we learn first about Warren Buffett? When I first read the chapter, the thing that stuck out to me was that she walked 18 miles when she was 13 to this train station. And she was only 4'10", which felt good because I was really short at the time. And then moved to America in her 20s and just created this new life, which was so awesome because as a kid who was six, the idea that someone who was only a little bit older than me could do all of that and then found a life here was just, it was so cool. It seemed like one of those superhero stories, you know?
The Nebraska Furniture Mart, founded by Rose Blumkin in the 1930s, is an Omaha institution. The company has been a part of the Berkshire Hathaway portfolio for more than 40 years, and it remains today all in the family.
This way? That okay? We can work around that.
Becky Quick caught up with the chairman.
I see you every morning.
Thanks for watching.
Of the Nebraska Furniture Mart, Irv Blumkin.
Rose Blumkin, Mrs. B, was your grandmother. You now have a grandson who is working at Nebraska Furniture Mart. So that's five generations that have worked at the store, been part of this. What's that mean to you?
There's just nothing better having family in the business, and they bring new ideas and new energy, and it's just great to see their perspectives on thing. Having my grandson on the sales floor selling, he's there today. He came back from California last night because he wanted to be here for Berkshire Weekend. So it's a thrill. There's just nothing better than have a family that works together and gets along together, and it's just a pleasure.
You have no plans to stop, right? This is what you love doing.
I'm having too much fun. I get up every day, like Warren says, and tap dance to work, and as long as I'm still having fun and still trying to take care of the customers and serve the customers, I'll be here for a long time.
How does it go from let's check this out to let's actively participate and ask questions of one of the most famous investors of all time?
Well, the first time I came to the meeting, we had no idea what was happening. We sort of pieced together that we were supposed to camp out and we wanted good seats, so we did that. And we were sitting and watching the meeting, and I started seeing people asking questions. And I was like, Dad, I want to do that. Why can't I ask a question? The next year, we came back, and I had a question for Mr. Buffett since I had started learning about him when I was six, after I learned about his model of capital efficient and capital intensive businesses. So I was like, we need to do this. And then we got really lucky.
My question to you, Mr. Buffett, is, could you please explain why Berkshire's largest recent investments have been departed from your old capital efficient philosophy? And why specifically have you invested Burlington Northern instead of buying a capital efficient company like American Express?
You're killing me, Daphne.
The way questions work is you put your name in a lottery. And I was just I assumed I wasn't going to be able to ask a question because there are 50,000 people here. And I never assumed that as an 8-year-old I would be able to get that lucky. So shockingly, my name got pulled. And then my dad was like, okay, what do you want to ask him? And one of the first investing lessons I had was learning about capital efficient businesses, specifically the ones that Buffett invested in, like Coca-Cola and Geico and other insurance companies. And I remember being really curious when we looked through Berkshire's portfolio, because I didn't want to go to the meeting without knowing what exactly I was investing in. I was surprised when I learned that Berkshire had invested really heavily into railroads. And that it didn't seem to follow the same philosophy. So I didn't know the answer to the question. I asked Dad, and he was like, that's a really good question.
Erez, were you surprised when she came up with the question?
Yes, I was. But mainly just because I think it suggested to me that she was actually paying attention. I was like, listen, if we're gonna schlep to Omaha, and it's expensive and it's a lot of time, and yes, there's a ton of cool stuff in the convention hall, and we can buy 7 boxes of See's candy and stuff our face, but like it would be cool if you actually learn something here. I had very limited expectations about what she might retain in these conversations about investing. And I guess what that first question that she asked showed me was that she was actually retaining a fair amount of stuff, which was cool.
Is that scary or were you nervous?
Oh my God, my legs were shaking. And every year since, I've like, it doesn't get easier. Like the scariest part about it was like, I was speaking to like, not only my personal investing heroes, I was speaking to like one of the most hallowed and famed investors ever. Like, sorry, it was just...
There are 40,000 people in that room.
It was terrifying. It was fun. It was terrifying.
The Berkshire meeting is primarily a business update for shareholders whose investment is linked to the decisions Buffett makes and sometimes announces right here in Omaha. And one decision this year, to trim 13% of Berkshire Hathaway's stake in its biggest holding, Apple.
Becky, do you want to start with the first question?
Sure. Thanks, Warren. Let's start, just given what you mentioned, there was some news that came out in the 10Q this morning. It shows that Berkshire sold another 115 million shares of Apple in this last quarter. That's Berkshire's largest holding. And I think in that vein, we'll start with a question from Sherman Lam. He is a 27-year-old Berkshire Hathaway Class B shareholder from Malaysia. And he asks, last year, you mentioned Coca-Cola and American Express being Berkshire's 2 long-duration partial ownership positions, and you spent some time talking about the virtues of both these wonderful businesses in your recent shareholder letter. I noticed that you have excluded Apple from this group of businesses. Have you or your investment manager's views of the economics of Apple's business or its attractiveness as an investment changed since Berkshire first invested in 2016?
No, but we have sold shares, and I would say that at the end of the year, I would think it extremely likely that Apple is the largest common stock holding we have. Now, one interesting thing is that Charlie and I looked at common stocks or marketable equities or the things that people love to look at as being businesses. And so, When we own a Dairy Queen or we own whatever it may be, we look at that as a business. And when we own Coca-Cola or American Express or Apple, we look at that as a business. Now, we can buy really wonderful companies in the market as businesses. We can't buy all of them. All of their shares. We can't buy 90% or 80% or anything like that. But when we look at Coca-Cola and American Express and Apple, we look at them as businesses. Now, there's differences in tax factors. There's difference in managerial responsibility, a whole bunch of things. But in terms of deploying your money, we always look at every stock as a business. And we have no attempt made to predict markets. We have no attempt made to pick stocks. I went through many, many years doing the wrong thing. I got interested in stocks very early, and I was fascinated by them. And I wasn't wasting my time because I was reading every book possible and everything else. But finally, I picked up a copy of The Intelligent Investor in Lincoln, and there was a few sentences in there that said much more eloquently than I can say it, but if you look at stocks as a business and treat the market as something that doesn't tell you, isn't there to instruct you, but it's there to serve you, you'll do a lot better over time. Then if you try to take charts and listen to people talk about moving averages and look at the Fed pronouncements and all of that sort of thing. And so that made a lot of sense to me then. And the way I've been allowed to deploy it, Charlie and I talked about this, of course, constantly, it's changed over the years as the amount of capital we have and the kind of, has changed and all of that. But the basic principle was laid out by Ben Graham.
Buffett also revealed, just by answering shareholder questions, that his team made a losing bet on Paramount. At the end of 2023, Berkshire owned over 63 million shares of the troubled movie studio, and now the company owns none. Warren Buffett said he sold the entire stake at a loss.
Oh, incidentally, I should just throw this out there since there's been speculation on it. We've sold. I was 100% responsible for the Paramount decision. I read speculation that one of either Ted or Todd had some involvement in that. No, it was 100% my decision. And we sold it all, and we lost quite a bit of money. And that happens in this business, too. But actually owning Paramount made me think even further. I like to think deeper, but I certainly thought harder even about the whole question of what people do with their leisure time and what the governing principles are of running an entertainment business of any sort, whether it's sports or movies or whatever it might be. And I think I'm smarter now than I was a couple years ago, but I also think I'm poorer because I acquired the knowledge in the manner I did. But I just want to be very clear that A, we lost money on Paramount, and B, you know, I did it all by myself, folks.
Joining Warren Buffett on stage this weekend were Berkshire vice chairs Greg Abel and Ajit Jain. It was a rare opportunity to hear from the duo, who hardly ever speak to media or shareholders. Succession has long been a topic at these meetings, and when the CEO's 93, no matter how sharp, he won't be here forever. Greg Abel has been expected to be at the helm of Berkshire Hathaway after Buffett.
We have, first of all, Greg Abel, a director,
and he was revealed as the heir apparent in 2021. His role includes oversight of the non-insurance businesses. And until this point, Buffett himself has been the public face of investing decisions for the Berkshire portfolio, with occasional stock picks made by two investment managers, Ted Wexler and Todd Combs. Ted and Todd manage about $27 billion. But now, Warren Buffett is, maybe surprisingly, super clear about what happens next.
All right, the next question comes from Slavin Vukobrat. As CEO, will Mr. Abel be in charge of the portfolio of common stocks that Mr. Buffett has been managing, or will this function be exercised by Mr. Combs and Mr. Wexler?
Yeah.
As investing could be defined as the discipline of relative selection, can major capital allocation decisions, such as large acquisitions, be separated from the common stock selection process?
Yeah, I would say that decision actually will be made when I'm not around, and I may try and come back and haunt them if they do it differently. But I'm not sure the Ouija board or they will get that job done. So that job, I'll never know the answer on whether it get covered, but I feel very comfortable about the fact that it will be made by a board that they've got loads of brain power, they've got a dedication to an unusual institution, and they will figure things out. But I would say that if I were on that board and were making the decision, I would probably, knowing Greg, I would leave the capital allocation to Greg. He understands businesses extremely well. And if you understand businesses, you understand common stocks. I mean, if you really know how business works, you are an investment manager. How much you manage, maybe just your own funds or maybe other people. And
if you really are primarily interested in getting assets under management, which is where the money is, you know, you don't really have to understand that sort of thing. But that's not the case with Ted or Todd, obviously. But I think the responsibility ought to be entirely with Greg. The responsibility has been with me, and I farmed out some of it. And I used to think differently about how that would be handled. But I think the responsibility should be that of the CEO, and whatever that CEO decides may be helpful in effectuating that responsibility. That's up to him or her to decide at the time they're running the money. But so I would say that my thinking on that has developed to some extent. As the sums have grown so large at Berkshire, and we do not want to try and have 200 people around that are managing a billion each. It just doesn't work. I think that when you're handling the sums that we will have, you've got to think very strategically about how to do very big things.
Shareholder questions run for hours, and sometimes some tap into the emotion of a get-together like this, particularly in 2024, just months after Charlie Munger's passing.
Hi, my name is Ange Andronikis, and I'm wondering, if you had one more day with Charlie, what would you do with him?
It's kind of interesting because, in effect, I did have one more day. I mean, it wasn't a full day or anything, but we always lived in a way where we were happy with what we were doing every day. I mean, Charlie liked learning. He liked, as I mentioned in the movie, he liked a wide variety of things. So he was much broader than I was. But I didn't have any great desire to be as broad as he was, and he didn't have any great desire to be as narrow as I. But we had a lot of fun doing anything. And, we played golf together, we played tennis together, we did everything together. And this you may find kind of interesting. We had as much fun, perhaps even more to some extent, with things that failed, because then we really had to work and work our way out of them. And in a sense, there's more fun having somebody that's your partner in digging your way out of a foxhole than there is just sitting there and watching an idea that you got 10 years ago just continually produce more and more profit. So it wasn't, he really fooled me though. He went to 99.9 years. I mean, if you'd pick two guys, you know, he publicly said he never did it. A day of exercise, except where it was required when he was in the Army. So he never did a day of voluntary exercise. He never thought about what he ate. We started every day, and Charlie he was interested in more things than I was, but we never had any doubts about the other person, period. So if I'd had another day with him, we'd probably have done the same thing we were doing the earlier days, but we wouldn't have wanted another. We only had one day. there's a great advantage in not knowing where you're going to, what day you're going to die. And Charlie always said, you know, that just tell me where I'm going to die, so I'll never go there. Well, the truth is, you know, he went everywhere with his mind, and therefore, he was not only interested in the world at 99, but the world was interested in him. It's remarkable.
There is so much more from the Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting right after this.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Welcome back to this special Squawk Pod Reports from the 2024 Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting. Berkshire has more than 60 companies in its portfolio, and each one comes to this capitalist party ready to dazzle shareholders, who in turn come ready to shop.
Don't forget your special commemorative boxes of See's candy.
These exhibit companies are ready to absolutely sell out of merchandise.
We are ready now with more registrants.
Well, I know.
Last year, toymaker Jazzwares sold out of their plush Squishmallows after selling 1,000 toys in an hour, but they came ready to ring up in 2024. The most popular purchases, of course, are stuffed toy versions of Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett himself.
I don't want my wife to trade me in for this instead. I mean, we sleep in a double bed.
A fan favorite is See's Candy of California.
White chocolate? Whatever, it surprised me, really. I know it's all great.
Annually, See's sells a record amount of sweets. Becky Quick stopped by their busy booth while touring the convention center floor and spoke to CEO Pat Egan.
What were you guys prepared for when you showed up with us? How much did you bring?
We brought 11 and a half tons, and we also brought a little more merch this year. So we've got a candle, we've got t-shirts, we've got a couple of other things that people have been asking for the last few years. And so we want to take care of our customers, and we brought a lot more product this year.
You anticipate you'll sell out?
We do, yeah.
11 and a half tons.
We do. And anything that's left over, we're actually going to reach out to a food bank here and donate what's left instead of trucking it back to California.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a lot. What's the most popular thing that you sell?
It's always the peanut brittle. Peanut brittle and the staples. And particularly this year because we put a sleeve on the peanut brittle with a wonderful quote from Charlie. And so, yeah, that's going incredibly well. And the Berkshire box that has a picture of Warren and Mary on it as well. So those are flying like crazy.
Yeah, because peanut brittle, that was Charlie's favorite. He ate it through the entire meeting.
Yeah, so we have an animation of Charlie on the front of it leaning on some peanut brittle and kind of had to give him the tip of the cap.
Okay, this is your home crowd when you're here.
Yeah. Fans all over the place. Yeah. I mean, our shops are always filled with people who love the brand, but this is different. These are our owners.
Another Berkshire subsidiary is Lubrizol.
Come on over. We got a lot of good chemistry going on here.
Well, they've got a lot of good chemistry going on in Ohio.
The company makes chemicals for transportation, like engine oils and industrial lubricants.
Would you take a picture with the team?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Everybody say Mo Modules. We'll tell them what that means.
But it also has a role in beauty and skincare. Becky stopped by that booth to chat with CEO Rebecca Liebert.
What is the latest innovation that you've come up with? What is the thing you're most proud of right now?
Well, I'm proud of so many innovations, but one I will talk about specifically is this carbapol molecule that was invented in the 1960s. We've recently taken what is a fully synthetic molecule and made it biodegradable. And you know, that's what our customers and our customers' customers are looking for. They want to see us be able to take molecules that may have not had all of the bio functions in the past and give them the same sort of feeling and feature functionality, but do it with a bio backbone, and that's what we're doing.
Meaning that they're not forever chemicals at that point?
Well, none of ours were forever chemicals, let's be clear, but they were not bio-derived or biodegradable, and today we are moving forward with bio-derived and biodegradable products.
What roadblocks are there when you're trying to innovate, when you're trying to come up with new things? What are the regulatory hurdles that exist?
Well, you know, we want to bring molecules to the market that are better than the prior generation. And sometimes we have to get regulatory approvals for that. So we're looking forward to having partnerships with regulators, with legislators, to make sure that we can get these new molecules to the market, because our customers want them, and they're really better for the environment than historic molecules.
Does that give you an idea and an easier regulatory overview? If it's better for the environment, if customers want them, does that help you?
It does. And we just want real science to be used to make these decisions, right? Because if we provide the science that shows it's better for the environment, then we'd like to have a very cooperative regulatory framework.
Pilot is a newcomer to the family of 100% Berkshire-owned companies. The line of truck stops and gas stations was just fully acquired after a planned slow purchase from the founding Haslam family for a total of $13.5 billion.
Let's start with a gas station or a few thousand bucks, then, and somebody with a lot of imagination and drive, and it was done, you know, one brick at a time.
CEO of the travel center and fuel company, Adam Wright, brought to Omaha a truck, a trucking simulator, and some of his 30,000 team members.
This is the Pilot team. They've been working real hard to represent the brand here for the first time, and we're excited to be here. You want to drive?
No, I don't think I'm driving.
Wright sat down with Becky Quick ahead of the annual meeting.
Joining us right now is the CEO of one of Berkshire companies that is celebrating, CEOs who's celebrating 1 year in that role. We want to bring in Adam Wright. He is the CEO of Pilot. And Adam, great to see you.
Thank you, Becky. It's great to be back. It's great to be back in Omaha, my hometown. My thoughts and prayers are obviously with everyone who's rebuilding after the tornadoes last year.
Yeah, those were devastating. I've seen a lot of footage from it. But it looks like people are up and ready to go, and things are going to go off as usual here.
That's right. Some normalcy helps.
Yeah, it does. Adam, I want to talk to you about everything you're doing at Pilot right now. So this is a company that Berkshire bought outright, bought the remaining tranche of it back in 2024. I think the final price paid was $2.6 billion. It was in 2023. A total of $13.5 billion to buy this company. Now you're in charge and you are spending $1 billion renovating, changing, updating, remodeling things. What do you see on the ground? What has to be done?
Yeah, I think first we have a great brand. It's a 65-year-old company. We're in 44 states. We have more than 800 outlets, and it's a brand most people really haven't heard of until here recently with the acquisition from Berkshire. And we have an opportunity to upgrade our stores, and we're focused on doing that, investing $1 billion, like you said, to upgrade 400 of those locations to bring them into the future, a much better guest experience, shopping experience. Want to make sure we're preparing for electrification of the transportation sector. So we're putting in EV chargers at several of those coast to coast. We just have to bring our stores up to really give a great guest experience.
What was kind of lacking in the guest experience before? Where are you focusing those that money, at least in the stores? And then we'll talk about electrification.
Sure. Some of it is to bring food forward, just making sure we have a great deli experience. Others is making the aisles wider. They call them gondolas, but we're pretty cramped in there, so we're trying to give more space so that guests can move around the stores more freely, bringing our showers up to date. We do over 70,000 showers a day.
Because this is where truckers pull in. They're going to come in, have a meal, get refueled, take a shower, refreshed.
Right, exactly right. Pumps, parking lots, really just upgrading the whole aesthetics of the experience for the customer.
You know, trucking is a pretty major industry, an indicator of the economy. So what do you see right now, just in terms of how truckers are feeling, how much is moving, how much freight is moving on the highways?
Well, this is a tough time for truckers right now. Trucking's a tough industry generally. So you have a capital intensive business, you have high turnover, you have low margin, it's cyclical, it's seasonal. If you have one or two of those in any business, it's pretty going to be pretty challenging. Trucking has all of it. And we're in a pretty down cycle right now, mostly because freight rates. There's too much capacity from a trucking standpoint for the freight that needs to be moved. That depresses rates. And so it's making it very challenging for the large and the small truckers.
Is that because there's less freight that needs to be moved, or is this relative to pandemic level highs when a lot of stuff was moving?
We're actually starting to see inventory levels come back down. They were a little bit bloated coming out of the pandemic. Those are starting to return back to normal levels. So we do expect some of those inventory headwinds to start to move out of the way. It's really just an overcapacity. During COVID and the big boom, you could buy a truck and get high rates, $4 a mile. That allowed a lot of 1-2 fleet operators to come in to play, and that really just created overcapacity. So now that has to work its way out, and then things will start to level out.
Okay, your background is in energy. You came from Berkshire Hathaway Energy, moved on to another company, but you really grew up in the energy industry. And what you're doing right now is trying to make sure, as you mentioned, that you are looking at all ways, whether that's going to be any right. sort of fuel or any charging levels. You've got a partnership with GM. What are you doing with that? What's the electrification and charging stations you're putting
right. in? Right. And so it's important for us to really be fuel agnostic and gas focused. And we want to keep up with the speed of value for our customers. So how is the economy moving and what offering do our guests want? EVs clearly have made a significant run. And they continue to grow. And we think there's going to be demand despite some of the challenges here recently. You know, Tesla,
obviously.
Yeah, we
keep hearing about how there's not as much demand for EVs and people would rather have hybrids. Have you seen that play out too?
We have, but I think it's going to push through. And one way or another, I think having charging infrastructure at our stores is going to be welcomed by EV owners. We see it, 40 to 50% increase in charging sessions and energy dispense on weekends and holidays.
Really?
So that says EV owners want to take their EVs from urban settings and take them across country. So we're starting to see an uptick in that. But our goal is to build out 2,000 chargers at 500 locations by 2026. We're making good progress, overcoming a few challenges and thinking through how to work with the multiple utilities across 44 states.
What are the challenges?
Yeah. A lot of it's infrastructure, getting the infrastructure built on the utility side. A few of us just learning some of the technology and how to even price the electricity that we sell to make sure that it's economical for us and it's priced fairly for the customer. So we're working through that, but we're making a lot of headway and I feel good about it.
How fast do the chargers charge? Are these superchargers? Are these ones that take a half an hour and somebody goes in and takes a shower in the meantime? What's your model that you look at it?
That's it. It's about that. 30 minutes, we want to be able to get up to an 80% charge. And so these are very fast chargers, 350 kilowatt. Their chargers, if that means anything to anybody, but they are the fastest on the market right now. And the idea is that to give amenities to EV drivers that they customarily don't have.
So that the EV driver, if you're driving across country, is going to seek out one of your places and figure I can get everything done there.
Right. And you have a canopy so you can charge outside the elements. You can go in and get a hot meal. You can relax, walk around. Hopefully you buy some products to take with you the rest of the road trip.
Adam, I want to thank you very much for being with us. If you had one thing that you want to get out of this weekend, what is it?
Out of this weekend, I want our team to recognize that we're part of Berkshire Hathaway and what that means and the opportunity we have to build a lasting and durable brand that serves 1.3 million guests every day.
You have a cool setup over here, by the way. I haven't been to it yet, but I've heard about it, and you can actually get in and drive a semi.
You have to drive.
You got to get in and drive it, and it's a simulator all the way
around?
You
have to drive, yep. Producer Lacey said there's no score. She was disappointed. She drove it yesterday, so she wants to see a score.
But of course.
Exactly. But it's actually one of a kind. So this is the first time an actual simulator has been built in a real truck. And so you get the real feel and look of driving a semi.
I will try it out. We will go over and check it out later. But Adam, thank you very much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me. Appreciate
it. Adam Wright.
Getting to know Warren Buffett's portfolio companies and their shopping opportunities are rarely the only reasons that attendees come back year after year. They're here for Warren himself, for his 93 years of wisdom. And many of those shareholders take their prized time at the mic to ask about life.
Jeff Robillier from Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I'm thinking of Dr. Graham, Mr. Munger, your father, and my question is for all of us, but it's probably especially for the younger people in the room, the importance of picking the right heroes in life, choosing friends wisely, and maybe tell us a story, if you could, about each of those folks. Thank you, sir.
Well, there's no question you're 100% right in terms of having the right heroes. And, you're lucky if you get them. I mean, Charlie had them, I had them. And the interesting thing, my sister is here today. My younger sister with the two survivors. And we both experienced having the same hero, even though as we grew older, we saw that we didn't agree with plenty of his ideas, but we did agree with his values and motivation. And that's a better lesson than having somebody that's reading to you from a catechism that has got a lot of rules in it, which are pretty good rules, but there's a special place for somebody that is going to continue loving you, even if you break some of the rules. And that's what Charlie had in his life, was what Bernie and I had in our life. So I would just repeat what you said. I don't need to give you a bunch of, when I ran away from home, I'll give you a specific example with me. When I ran away from home and we hitchhiked up to Hershey, Pennsylvania, and got picked up by the state police and everything, and I talked these other two guys into it. And we lied like crazy to the state police, you know, saying we had our parents' permission. Some kid at the place where we stayed had tipped them off that we'd run away from home, and we started, like I said, when the state police picked us up, we decided that two things, you know, we decided to tell them a bunch of lies about the fact we had our parents' permission, and we decided we better get out of Hershey because these cops were going to find out sooner or later. And so anyway, we end up back in Washington after a couple of days. And when I walked in the door, one of the boys' mother, and this other kid was the Congressman Roger Bell, and his mother was in the hospital over this whole thing. He'd taken out his cash in the savings bonds, and so she was sick, and Judge Bell, her husband, was all concerned and everything. And I walked in the door in Washington, and my mother said, "How come you came back so soon?" And my father said, he said, I know you can do better." And I just paid more attention to my father than my mother. And so you want to have the right heroes. And you don't have to have them. It's not the heroes based on what they've accomplished, and it's the people that you want to be yourself. And if you copy the right people, you're off to a great start. And I don't mean a great start about making money. I mean a great start about living your life. And, so you can check with my sister Bertie, who's here, and see if I've told the story correctly. She ran away from home too, incidentally, but she didn't get as far as I got. But she was running away to go over to my grandfather's house, which was about 2 miles away. I don't want to denigrate her runaway abilities, because she was much more accomplished than I am in all kinds of other things. But when it comes to running away, I definitely outclassed her.
This has been the first of two parts of our Squawk Pod Reports coverage of the Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting. Please check out your feed later today for part two. You can see many more video clips, find transcripts, and lots of information on CNBC's Buffett Archive online. Go to buffett.cnbc.com. On our next special, someone who has known Warren Buffett since they were fighting over the good seat by the radio as kids in the 1930s, his younger sister, Bertie.
He's been with me my whole life. And still is. And there are not many of us in our generation left.
Squawk Pod is our daily podcast featuring the best moments and guest interviews from the Squawk Box Morning Show. Plus, a little extra, like trips to Omaha. Please follow us wherever you listen. If you're on Apple Podcasts right now and you hit that follow button, you'll get Squawk Pod every day, including our next episode from right here in Omaha. Keep listening.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.